Hola, mi gente. Welcome to our new podcast idea, Tellers. In this podcast, we're going to learn about innovative ideas and get to know the people who communicate those great ideas. Here's what's coming next.
I think what I would say is to believe in yourself and that it really, it's about that persistence. It's too easy whenever you go through an engineering or a STEM path to think that you don't belong. You do belong.
Yes.
And we need you. And it's a great career. I've loved being an engineer, and you can do it.
Dr. Kimberly Douglas is the Chief Research and Programs Officer at SHIP, the Society for Hispanic Professional Engineers. She was among the many leaders visiting Salt Lake City for its 2023 convention. Here, she gives us an insight on the work that is being done by SHIP in the field of inclusion into the STEM or STEAM professions. Make sure you also check Inno Latino newsletter on LinkedIn for a greater coverage of this great event. In the meantime, we're going to take a listening to last week's scene on innovation stories in only 1 minute. Enjoy. This is Idea Tellers. Last week in Ideas, NASA has a new and improved on-demand streaming service and app. It's called NASA Plus. Last week they launched a new world of original content from the space agency that includes children's shows, live launches, and my favorite, content en español. Speaking of aerospace, there's an emerging ecosystem in the West that promises the gathering of aerospace, defense, and cyber companies. It is called 47G. Their mission is to foster talent, entrepreneurship, and fuel innovation. Just do a search for 47G on LinkedIn. Lastly, according to Jim Cramer of CNBC, innovation and self-help are what allows stocks to buck the pull of the bond market. He highlighted the good performances of stocks with the names like Microsoft, Nvidia, Apple, Disney, Amazon, Meta, and Alphabet. The AI tech emerging from these giants is worth watching, people. That was the week in ideas. Hola, mi gente. Welcome. Bienvenidos a nuestro podcast. We have a special edition because it's the national convention for SHIP, the Society for Hispanic Professional Engineers 2023, and it's in my hometown in Utah. And I have the privilege of interviewing today Dr. Kimberly Douglas, Chief Research and Impact Officer of SHIP.
Yes, well deserved.
Bienvenida. Welcome, Dr. Douglas.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure is all mine. Dr. Douglas, you have quite a trajectory in research, but from a focus of inclusion and equality. Would you like to tell me a little bit about your background, please?
So I started out pursuing an engineering degree. And while I was getting that degree, I very quickly learned that I was often the only in the room. I can remember being in a material science class where I was one of 200. And I was the only person that the professor knew the name of because I was the only person that was different. I decided that some of us that were able needed to decide to be in the front of the room. So I went on to get my PhD and spent probably, before I moved on into the diversity space, probably 10 to 15 years as a faculty member teaching in industrial engineering. And then my dean at that campus was ready to build diversity programs. And what I went to do was to look at the top campuses across the country and look at what were the typical things that they included in their programs. And so that positioned me whenever I had children then and wanted to move back to the Midwest to look at how I could get back to closer to Oklahoma. And one of the roles that I applied for was a Women in Engineering and Science program at Kansas State. And there I had an opportunity to support 17 different departments and across engineering and across science. And it was a primarily white institution. And so whenever you think about gender there, what we today discuss a lot, intersectionality, was key. And so thinking about how I could not only help all female students, but particularly those that had intersectional identities. And while I was there, I had a donor. His name was Dr. Eugene Carter. And Dr. Carter is very interested in particular at supporting Latinas who are either immigrants themselves or who are of recent immigrant heritage. He was instrumental in me going back and looking at understanding the issues that Hispanic and Latino individuals face as they pursue STEM careers. And I think that set me on the trajectory to where I'm at today. It was kind of a cool study. He had one of his board members that believed that as Latinos, the individuals incurred debt, that they would change majors so that they could finish faster. And so we essentially set up a study to test it.
Uh-huh.
And so we had 20 people that paid off the subsidized Stanford loans for whenever they finished their degree, a comparison group, because we had 40 people on K-State's campus that were in the category we were looking for. So we literally paired them on like 12 different characteristics. And then I looked at the extent to which each graduated, and the percentage was very, very high for those that had their Stanford loans paid off. And if I remember right, gosh, that's been so, so long ago, but it was like in that, it was only like 30 or 40% for the group that didn't get the loan. So I hope someday to repeat that research and shift.
Yeah.
But that's what got me here.
So pretty much ignited the Latino spark.
Yes.
And I have to thank your previous team and yourself, because sometimes main institutions take us for granted, you know, and having the approach of giving priority to research and challenging assumptions is what really going to move the needle.
Right. The way that I think about it is that, you know, so much of the work that we did back then was really with a deficit approach, thinking about what people didn't have and then figuring out how to address those issues. And I think where we're at today, and we've started to look at how to fund some research that we want to do, but really focusing more on an asset-based approach.
Okay.
What characteristics or expertise skill set do Latino individuals bring to the workforce so that not only can we look at how to strengthen those, but also how do we look at helping inform the community, our industrial partners, our university partners, so that they can also include those things, say, for example, in selection criteria or otherwise. And so really what we're doing at SHIP, we are very much focused on supporting our members' success, but we also want to make sure that we're doing work that can inform the nation and the world, for that matter, on making a difference in this space.
That is fascinating, especially if the study taking place right now. Has it been published?
We've submitted the asset-based proposal a couple of different places so far. So I've got to find the funder.
Okay.
So it will happen. It's just a matter of how soon do we find the funding to be able to do it.
One of the things that the people involved in the field of DEI always bring to the table is that it's not a matter of PD. It's a matter of bringing people with talent in areas that might be lacking. You know, any organization might benefit because culturally that asset might have something that is going to bring an organization ahead.
Right.
What is your opinion on this angle, the fact that diversity might be focused on asset and skills, and that the competitive advantage that can be increasing against an organization?
The research shows that whenever teams are diverse, all types of diversity, be it socioeconomic background, be it race, ethnicity, be it gender, be it sexual orientation, be it religion, whatever it is, we know that ROI is higher whenever we have a diverse team that's working on the design. I think from my perspective, I think it's important to think about making sure that those voices are heard and that they're valued. But then I think the other thing that we're trying to do is we're really trying to put our members in positions where they are leaders and where they are the expert, so that as others see them, the culture ends up changing. So let me give you an example. So we run a program that's called Excel Conship, It's based on a program that I ran at K-State, which I do have findings from. In that case, what we were doing is we were hiring white students of color there, so both African American, Native, and Hispanic, and we were hiring them to be tutors. We paid them to attend class, and then they were a tutoring resource to everyone that takes the class. So in a traditional program, they would have only been the tutors for those that were like them, right? But in this program, they're tutoring everyone. And what we found, we tested results on that for all groups. There were significant findings in terms of GPA, in terms of retention, in terms of degree completion. And then at that time, we also measured the extent to which they saw individuals who were female and of color as viable colleagues. And what we found was that when they accessed a tutor who was of those diverse characteristics, that they valued them then. They saw their value. And essentially what we're doing now at SHIP, in a partnership that we have with Reboot Representation, we're actually doing the same thing, focused on Latina, BLNA women, Black, Latina, and Native American women in computer science. And so we have tutors on 4 campuses, I believe. It might be 5. I didn't look at those numbers before I sat down to talk with you. But essentially, we're replicating that. And again, what we're working on right now at SHIP is working on programs that we can document the success of and then look at how we can scale them. Because if you think about SHIP's organization and our reach nationwide on all of the campuses in all of the cities that we're in for our professionals, we have the ability to scale.
Yes.
And so it's a matter of looking at what programs that we can do that are scalable and then working with our partners, our corporate partners and our government partners and our university partners to make sure that they're sustainable after we're scale.
It's interesting. The approach is scalability first and then sustainability. So let's go for it and then how we can make it last. But at the moment, let's cause as much impact as possible. Am I right?
Well, let's make sure that what we're building is going to do what we want it to do. So that we're making data-driven decisions. Because the thing about it is, if we can show the success of it, I guess I believe in the good of us all and of all of the people and stakeholders that are at play. And so if we can show that it can be successful and can work, then we're positioned to be able to together as a community sustain. I'm gonna believe in the good.
Yes. Thank you for such an approach. And I'm fascinated because I know that there is a SHIP chapter at BYU. And I don't know if the university.
Actually, I think there is at BYU, and then there's a satellite campus that I think we just approved a chapter at.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you describe a little bit about the programs that you are running on right now?
Yeah. So I've got a couple of programs right now that we've fully tested that we're in the process of looking at how to scale. One of those is Equipando Padres. And essentially what we're doing, whenever we went to look at the research, we knew we needed to build parent programming. And so what we want to do is we want to equip the parents to be able to support their children in earning their engineering degrees. And more specifically, whenever we went to look at what was already out there and being done, what we learned was there was programming there that was for Hispanics. There was programming there that was for first generation of college. And there was programming there for engineering. But there was really no program that did those three together. And so we essentially worked through the great support of Raytheon Technologies and additional support from the United Engineering Foundation. We were actually able to design a program that essentially what we're doing is we're helping parents, Hispanic first generation to college parents whose children are going into engineering. We're helping them learn how to, you know, how to have instrumental support for their child. And what I mean by that is that Hispanics by nature, Hispanic individuals by nature and familia are always there to emotionally support their child. Yeah. They're going to be the biggest cheering squad that anyone has, right? That's exactly the way it will be.
Yeah. Contrary to what many movies say.
Agreed. We could talk about media for a while, but we won't go there now. So what we're really trying to do, because many of our parents, about 53% of our members are first generation to college. And so often when those parents' children go to school, they don't know how to help them navigate that path.
Okay.
And so essentially what we're doing is we're teaching the parents about the educational system.
Okay.
So that they know how to help their child navigate that space. So that in addition to being that emotional support, that they do so well, that they have the ability to provide instrumental support as well. And that's a program that we designed and then piloted last year. And now we have plans to scale. And we're at that spot I was talking about a moment ago where we've got to trust we'll find the right partners.
Yeah.
Because we've grown beyond what Raytheon and UEF will be able to support. And we've got to find those other sponsors that will help us get there.
So you're scaling right now with the program.
That's an example of a program that we're ready to scale.
Wow. Thank you for doing that. My two daughters are showing interest in programming and robotics. And sometimes I'm feeling like, wow, is there more that I should be doing? You know, so a program like this, I know it's going to help a lot of parents like myself. Any other programs that you would like to comment on?
The program that I was talking about earlier about the tutoring.
Yes.
So that's one that is also the platform that we're using there is actually set to be able to scale easily. Wait. And so looking at how we can spread that to more campuses and also how we can not only be focused on computer science, but also focus on some of the other disciplines. So if you look at SHIP, we have the most members in computer fields like CS and computer engineering, and then also mechanical engineering. So those are probably the likely places to go next. But when you go to those places, oftentimes it's those early courses that are that keeper courses that keep people out of careers. And so whenever you go to build a program like this, you target the calculus courses, the chemistry courses, the physics courses, those things that when we're taking them, like when I took them as an engineering student, those are the ones that can get you discouraged.
Yes.
And I think if there was anything that I would say to the parent that might be listening, it's that you always want to keep your child doing math.
Okay.
If they make it all the way through the math sequence at their school, have them take a statistics course or something else so they're going to be doing math. And then in these fields, you're always going to hit a bump where you think you're going to, it doesn't matter who you are, you're going to have a test that you fail. You're going to have a course that doesn't go the way you want it to.
Yes.
And it's really about persistence. And that tenacity and persistence is something that's very prevalent in Latino culture.
Yes.
And to me, that's... You've got to make sure that you encourage your child to tap into that part of your heritage and your culture so that they'll get to where they need to go.
Si se puede. Fascinating. And thank you for encouraging us parents in doing that. Dr. Douglas, consider myself a storyteller, podcaster, and someone who believes that storytelling can actually help others be converted into a positive cause. And I was wondering if SHIP yourself in your career have used storytelling to further your programs or your approach towards adversity as well?
I think that in the work that we do, the connection between storytelling and having an impact is really about the role models.
Okay.
And making sure that we put role models in the right place to have the right conversations so that their stories can inspire others. So for example, the umbrella programming for our pre-college space is called Futuro STEM. And one of the things that we do within that are called virtual STEM labs. The kids get to do hands-on activities and we mail KiwiCo kits to their homes. but one of the things we make sure that we do is that those that they interact with and those that are running those activities have a personal story that we expect that the audience can identify with.
Okay.
And we encourage them to weave that story into the course of what they do with the kids, with the youth, so that they can hopefully see themselves and see a path to get to where those engineers or those scientists are at. So it's critical. And we just, in one of our most recent needs assessments, we do an annual needs assessment. We asked about role models. And role models come up as critical across the board. So making sure that those stories are seen and heard
And thank you for doing that, because I agree. Those stories need to be heard and need to be told as well. And those are going to, I think they're going to make a difference when we're trying to move the needle eventually among our people and other disadvantaged communities when we're trying to get them into the STEM field. Any words that you have to Latinas specifically that want to get into the STEM field?
I think what I would say is to believe in yourself, and that it really is about, it's about that persistence. And it's too easy whenever you go through an engineering or a STEM path to think that you don't belong. You do belong.
Yes.
And we need you. And it's a great career. I've loved being an engineer, and you can do it.
Thank you, Doctora. Si se puede. That was Dr. Kimberly Douglas from SHIP. Thank you, Doctora, for being here.
This is Idea Tellers.
Nos vemos.